The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 470 for Monday, October 14th, 2013. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in today. Cool stuff found. Yeah, I know. Normally we answer questions and share tips, and tips will be part of this today. And I'm sure we'll come up with some questions. But today it's all about cool stuff found here back in Durham, New Hampshire, USA. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here, still in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
So I had quite the travels last week, John. In fact, you and I got to see each other throughout my travels. I headed down.
Yeah. I thought you'd just blow past me. When I saw you on 95, I was like, oh, I hope you'll stop by. So yeah, we...
And I did.
Had a fine meal.
We did have a fine meal. Excellent conversation. Fine meal. What's that?
The sushi boat.
The sushi boat. Yeah, you got to do... When you do sushi, you got to do the boat. So yeah, I spoke down in Princeton for the PMUG group, and several of you came out, and at least one listener came out, and I think Brent is in the chat room here, and I never got to shake your hand. So if you ever come and see me speak, or if we just happen to be in the same place, please do interrupt me, whatever I'm doing, and tell me who you are, because I mean this, I really do love meeting listeners. It's the fact that you folks listen and contribute and all of that really does mean a lot to me. And I know it means a lot to you, John. So I would, I love to meet folks, but then on my way back, I had a day to kill. So I went to, came back to Connecticut, and John, you and I hung out for a while, played with your disc station a little bit, which I think we'll probably talk about during the show. Because I think you're starting to see the light on those,
and then, absolutely, yeah. I think I hooked you up with a couple of goodies.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. I gotta get those out of my car. I totally forgot about those because it's been a crazy whirlwind trip. Because I, from your house essentially, I drove up to Canada. I drove up to Montreal.
You crossed the border?
I did.
Did they let you in?
I've never had trouble getting in. I did. I'll tell this story because I'll say hello to everybody in the chat room, MacGeekGab.com/stream, who all know that this show's already off the rails. But yeah, in 1995, I walked across the border to Canada. I was on the road with a band and we were in the Niagara Falls area. So we walked across the border. We played like skee ball and whack-a-mole or whatever. And, just stupid stuff. And then when we came back, they said, still a proof of citizenship. So we all, told them, oh, we're U.S. citizens. Here's our driver's licenses. Now, remember, this is pre 9/11. And there is a technical aspect that sort of blew me away to this story, way pre 9/11. And so they're like, that's great. You can drive in our country. Now, about that citizenship thing we mentioned. Yeah, we didn't have anything there. And there were three of us. I was number two in line. And I didn't realize, they never said anything. I didn't even think to ask if a social security card at that point in time would have been enough, because I probably had mine folded in my wallet with me. But it didn't matter. I didn't think of it. So they said, oh, OK, we kind of told them what we were doing on the road. We didn't think blah, blah, blah. And they said, OK, they asked the first guy, state your name and city and state of birth. And this is it, like a tiny little shack on the bridge that you walk, between the two countries in and around Niagara Falls. And again, 1995, he gives them his name, city and state of birth. They type it into their little computer and they say, OK, yep, you're good to go. And this blew me away that they had everybody in accessible in their little database terminal there. So so I did the same thing. And then, of course, the last guy, they asked him where he was born, and he said he was born in Gander, Newfoundland. And they kind of gave him, they raised their eyebrow and said, what makes you think you're a U.S. citizen? And he explained how he was adopted and naturalized by the time he was five. So they actually they ran him through the ringer a little bit and then finally made him say the Pledge of Allegiance, which we all thought was kind of funny. but it got him through. So yes, this time I had my passport with me, John, both ways, and getting into Canada was no problem. Getting out actually was no problem. There was just a line of traffic that maybe lasted 20 minutes coming across the border.
Now, do you have an enhanced driver's license?
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't know. You've probably heard of that.
I have. Yeah, I just use my passport going in and out.
Okay. Because I haven't tested yet. Because my understanding is that the driver's license plus could be used for... You know, kind of the same thing as
for those. Yeah. Those land based border crossings. I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you made it through. Good. Good.
I did. But while I was up there,
they didn't get my call.
No, thankfully. Yeah. But what was funny was, you know, they ask you both ways. Either why are you going here or what did you come here for? And I told them I'm heading up to I'm going to Montreal. And I'm going to a conference in Montreal, and I'm going to be back on Sunday. And I was going to the Singleton conference, and the border guard in Canada or heading into Canada knew about it. He's like, "Oh, a developers conference." I thought, "Whoa, yeah, there's like 130 people that go to this thing. How do you know about it?" But anyway, he knew. And it was, I love these small conferences. I know in the last show I talked about Mac Tech, Singleton was fantastic. One of the coolest parts about it, John, was how many former Mac Geek Gab listeners I ran into, right? Because most of these people are developers, right? So they tend not to need this type of Q&A help. Some developers do, but a lot. And I've always expected this, that there's people, you know, that start listening and then at some point may graduate beyond what we do here. And that's okay. And so it was really cool to see all these people who, you know, I mean, it's, you know, either started developing after Mac, you know, after they listened to Mac Geek Gab, or were developing on Windows and came, you know, over to the Mac and listened to us, you know, as they kind of got their feet wet for a couple of years, et cetera, et cetera. And it was awesome. So awesome to you know, hear from all these people that are doing great things that, oh yeah, I used to listen to your show and you helped me do this. It was very heartwarming. So any of you who are developers, this is a conference you want to go to. It's very, it's small. As I said, you know, 150 people or less, organized by Guy English and Luke Vandal and Scott Morrison. It really is about, it's one of those conferences that's as much about networking. The sessions are this year were focused on what they called core values. And they sort of left that definition open. And it was a lot of it was a, what's the right way to say it? Inspirational stuff, you know, people trying to inspire one another. And that's a good thing. You know, I mean, it's not the kind of thing you want to do every day. You actually want to get work done most days, but it is good to kind of steep yourself in that for a couple of days every now and again. So anybody out there who's a developer, I highly recommend checking out Singleton if and when they do it next year. Well worth it. And you get to go to Montreal. It's almost like a different country up there, John. That's supposed to be true. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I see the cast of characters here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know a few of these.
Yeah,
at least interacted with them.
It's nice, you know, conferences of that size, and I lump Mac Tech into this too. There's something to be said about the large conferences, like a Macworld Expo and that sort of thing, but there is an obvious pecking order hierarchy that I'm guilty of this too, where. You know, there's people that are less approachable and more approachable or just scenarios that paint themselves this way. And Macworld's not too bad about this, but there, you know, there are different things happening that not everyone is involved in or not everyone feels welcome at, even though they might be welcome at it. And at smaller conferences, it's 100% flat. Everybody's equal. It doesn't matter who you are. And if you're there, you're there and you're involved in everything. And you can't do this at a large scale. You can't have everybody eat their meals together and do all their social events together and all that stuff. And But at a small conference, you can, and it totally makes it, it flattens all that out, and everybody's just really comfortable, and we'll chat with whoever. And I mean, it really is a good thing to attend those smaller conferences too, for sure. So anyway, so that's my pitch for Singleton. I enjoyed the heck out of it. It's their third one. It was my first one, and I'm very glad I went. And I really enjoyed Montreal. Beautiful city. My inability to speak French was not really a problem at all. They were very, very kind to me up there. So that was good. Time to move on to Cool Stuff Found, or any questions about Singleton or anything else to mention before we roll on this, John?
Nope. I think I get it.
Okay, good. All right. Let's go to Phil. We'll start and see if we can't pick up the pace here. So Phil says he was taking a look in the airport utility. And if you hold down, you launch the airport utility, and when you're selecting your base station or time capsule or whatever it happens to be to edit, if you hold down the option button while clicking edit, you'll actually be brought to you'll be given an extra summary tab in Airport Utility, and it gives you all kinds of information, including the MAC addresses of your local, your Ethernet and Wi-Fi radios, but also details on each of the wireless clients that is connected, and your serial number and the software version and all that stuff. So it's just a cool thing. You know, it's one of those scenarios where holding down the option key is an awesome, awesome thing. So don't forget to try it. So thanks, Phil. All right, John, what's next?
I think Tony is next.
All right.
And hopefully you got some audio queued up here, but Tony has a nice tool, especially for people to use a microphone.
Let's see. Uh-oh.
Hey, Dave and John. John and Dave, this is Tony in Osaka. Tony in Osaka, Tony. And we've known each other Twitter a little bit. I've got kind of a good suggestion for your bin of cool stuff found. It's called Shush, or Shush Microphone Manager. And it's a great little tool for anyone who records on their Mac, and most useful for voice recording, for example, a podcast, but can also be used for Skype or FaceTime type conversations. It's a little app, and it sits in the menu bar with a small mic icon with some little sound waves on it. And you push the function key or your own hotkey, and the mic is muted while you hold the key down, and release the key, and you're live again. So recording, you need to clear your throat, yell at the dog, take a sip of your beverage, just push the button, and you're muted, and there's no click sound in or out. Works really well. It also has a reverse mode where you can just use it to push to talk, where you're in a default mute mode and only broadcast when you're holding the button down. And that's Shush Microphone Manager. It's by Mizage, M-I-Z-A-G-E, at mizage.com. And it's $2.99, a real deal. I use it all the time. It's great. And if I can, I like to plug a podcast that I do. It's aimed at teachers in general, but specifically English language teachers. And it's Two Teachers Talking. And it's twoteacherstalking.com. And at iTunes, Two Teachers Talking. So teachers, come and give us a listen. And, of course, most importantly, Tsukamaro Shinai Deyo. And that means don't get caught.
That's awesome. That's cool. This just thing's interesting, John. You know, the way you and I are set up, most of the time we have mute buttons on our external devices, but I can see that hugely valuable for even for this, right? Because maybe if you don't want to reach over for that. That's interesting.
Oh, mine's close enough. Yeah, I just got to make sure I hit the right button.
Right, right.
My mute button is actually next to the FX button, and I haven't yet hit that. By accident, much to your relief.
Much. Hey, 8.5
this
years.
This board, I think, has like 100 sound effects. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. We like those. That's cool. All right. Let's see. Moving on. Ben has a very interesting thing. He says, in iOS 7, I saw this in Notification Center. And what he's talking about is the new Notification Center that scrolls down from the top of the screen as you swipe down. And in the Today view, it gives you contextual information. It gives you the weather for where you are. But one of the things he noticed is he had an appointment away from his office, and it says traffic is unusually heavy on the way to your destination. The driving time is X. And that's just happening automatically, which I think is really cool. So check that out. I love using this the night, like at night before I go to bed, or just to get a picture of what. It's the Today tab, but it's not just today. If it's at night, it'll tell you what tomorrow looks like. And I find that really handy. It's a nice, nice little thing. So have you checked that out, John? Good stuff.
Which one? Sorry.
In iOS 7, right? The notification center, the Today tab.
Yeah. I haven't seen traffic notifications.
Well, you don't have appointments away from your house, right?
Good point. No, I right? thought I, yeah, I, so I guess having a location would make that,
right. You need to have put the location in the event on your calendar. That's yeah. That's a very good point. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I did the other day. I was actually up at,
well, maybe there was no traffic.
No. Yeah, actually there wasn't a lot. So, no, that's nice. Cause yeah, a lot of the tools you and I use, like, actually the one that you used, which is very cool, Glimpse, I believe.
Oh, that's right. So that you'd know when I was going to arrive at your house.
Yeah, no, that one's very cool. I actually had one of the authors, I think, actually got back to me because I made a feature request that I'd like to be able to, control the speed and direction of the, vehicle that I'm tracking. And it does not yet allow that.
Wait, what?
Well, I was watching you, and I see you going. You know, it shows your speed if you want to display that. I guess.
You know, yeah, I get to choose whether you get to see my speed. That's right.
But there was one point, and I don't know if you can do this with that tool. So, yeah, I think it's GLYMPSE for people who want to try it out. I think that's how they misspell it, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no, but I thought it was cool because at one point I saw you, and I didn't know if you knew, but there was like one point where I'm like, oh, maybe he wants to go this way instead, and you didn't. But I think it'd be kind of cool if people would be able to send you a message, maybe, you know, telling you a better way than their tool.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
At one point I saw where you could have either taken 95 or taken the Hutch. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if he knows that, you know, maybe taking the Hutch maybe is an option.
Right, right, right.
And it is, but you already knew about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Would have taken any longer. But
that's interesting, though.
Yeah, but it was neat. No, the author, I think they're based in Germany. So,
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I snuck that one in there.
Yeah, that's good. Nope. All right. Since you snuck that in, sneak the next one in.
Yeah, I almost didn't find it because it wasn't in our folder here, but now I have it. Because it was somewhere else on my system. But anyways, this is from our buddy Scott. So, this looks like a good reference for Mac geeks who periodically kvetches that he needs to learn more about regular expressions. Of course, I know this stuff and don't need a cheat sheet. And it's basically a regular expression reference for BB edit. And we'll link to it, of course, along with all the other good stuff here. But if you use BB edit to work with text files, you're aware of, well, you should be aware of, the regular expression capability within BBEdit. So this helps you understand that because based on what I've seen, regular expressions can look like line noise or seemingly random assembly of special characters. So having a reference as to how, and I guess regular expressions can let you, you know, search, replace, all sorts of stuff, right?
Yeah, you could replace with a regular expression. Yeah, I usually use them for searches. The way I think of regular expressions is that they are a filter on something, and then you can do something once you have a filtered set of data. But yes, you can do replacements with them. But it's massively powerful and oh so arcane in its syntax. I'm not even going to bother to try and explain it here, A, because it won't make sense to hear it audibly, and B, I will most certainly get it wrong. And B, I think Trump's A in this case. But yeah, it's a way of structuring a filter that you then apply to text. But the text can be a list of file names. The text can be, you know, text in a document, as it would be for BBEdit. And you can have variables, and you can say, okay, if something of this length is in here, but then ends with this character or begins with this character or has one of these six characters in the middle between this character and that character, then, you know, spit that result out. Very, very powerful. I would say almost infinitely so, but I don't use it regularly enough, which is a pun, right? To even begin to remember how to structure a regular expression each time I need to. So it's always this, okay, we'll head down that path. So yeah, this reference actually is a very cool thing. We've had it in our queue for a while, and I don't know why I'm not using it yet. So I will remedy that. Good stuff. All right. Moving on to in staying in the somewhat geeky realm, but moving on a little bit, Benjamin, actually, this isn't all that geeky at all. Benjamin recommends something called Pass Source at passsource.com. He says you can use passsource.com to create passcode or passbook cards for almost anything. He says he was creating them for his rewards cards. And then you download the link via email and it pops up and offers it to add it to your passbook in iPhone via iCloud. He says, and then about 5 seconds later, boom, it shows up in passbook. So this is passsource.com. It's that simple. You create your own custom passes, for free. So check it out. It's pretty cool. I like those passbook things. They're really handy. I've used them for, you know, boarding passes and hotel loyalty cards and all that stuff. It's very, very, very handy. Do you use passbook, John?
I was using something else. Let me see if I can find
it. Oh, okay.
I don't know if it's obsolete. Oh, yeah. Well, here again, you know, this show is kind of sometimes all over the place, but
yeah.
It's called CardStar.
Okay.
And I think it's similar in that it lets you. So they have a bunch of loyalty cards, you know, like I have a Stop and Shop card and a BJ's card and stuff like that. And it basically will let you scan it and then display it.
Oh, I have something better.
I think it's similar in function. Well, no, it sounds like it's a, you know, subset of what
but it's a targeted subset, right?
And that basically you input, or I think you can scan, and then once it's in here, then it's in here. It's part of like your virtual wallet, if you will. So you don't have to fish around for the card. As long as you have your phone with you, then you're set.
Sure. So I have another thing that I found in a similar vein called Lemon Wallet. And I'm so glad you brought this up, because I would have forgotten about Lemon Wallet. It's at lemon.com, but there's an iOS app. And in the similar vein, it creates passbook things, but it creates them for anything. And you actually can use the app to scan your stuff. So and then it will create passbook cards for anything. So like I said, I was using mine for hotel loyalty cards, but that's because the app that Starwood Hotels creates a passbook card. Well, if your hotel loyalty program doesn't have an app, or the app doesn't create cards, well, then you're out of luck. Not so if you use Lemon Wallet. And then, and you can also do other things. You can add payment credentials to certain, you know, merchants and stuff. So it's at lemon.com is where you start, but obviously the iOS app you would get from the app store. So very cool stuff. I like it. I like it when stuff spirals out of control like that. That's good.
Well, we maintain some control.
What's that?
Well, we're trying to maintain a little control.
We are.
We're staying focused, I think.
All right. And then we've got AceNet in the chat room suggesting something called Keyring app at keyringapp.com. and I'm trying to figure out what it does. It, let's see. It says scan and store your existing loyalty cards. Okay, so like Lemon Wallet, you can enroll in new loyalty programs. You get exclusive coupons, of course, to encourage you to use the app. Cards can be scanned in seconds, and you can join new programs in seconds. So similar kind of thing. Very, very cool. Very cool. All right, well, we'll add that one too. See, this is how it goes. This is cool stuff found on the fly, folks. And it's how we do it. Keyring app. All right. One that came in via Twitter from Tom is something called tapforms.com. Different realm. We're leaving the passbook realm behind, at least for now. Tapforms essentially is the best way I can explain it is FileMaker built for mobile stuff, kind of like Bento was, but according to Tom and several others that suggested this to us, even more so. It's tapforms.com. They've got three apps. They've got a Mac app, which I believe is $25. It's either $25 or $29. And then the iPhone app and the iPad app are each $9, $8.99, and obviously all in their respective app stores. And the idea is you can create personalized databases, but they also have templates that you can start with. And again, I haven't really, I messed with it a little bit, but according to the folks who have sent this in, Tom being one of them, it's very easy to use these templates. It's very easy to modify them. So you can have, you know, you could create your own contacts database, although you may or may not need to do that depending on how well the existing one serves you. But a database of movies you want to see, a database of, you know, basically anything you want. And it, you can sync with iCloud so that your databases are everywhere. You can sync with Dropbox so that your databases are everywhere. And it's very built to be very simple to build your own database in a you know, graphical way. So you're not actually having to do any coding or anything like that. So it's at tapforms.com. Thanks, Tom, and actually several others for sending that in. What's next, John? Am I still on the spot here? Is it still me?
I think so.
Okay.
This looks to be a related.
Not really. No. Coda notes. From Leon, he says, on the topic of Safari extensions, I love Coda Notes. You can mark up a web page right in Safari and send it off right from within Safari. And it's almost as good as, if not better than, saving the web page to PDF and doing your own markup and saving and then sending. Coda cuts out at least three steps you would need to do the markup as a PDF. So it's cool. You go to Panic's page. It's from the people that make Coda, the editor, but also transmit the FTP app and all the other great stuff that Panic does. And once you've added this extension to Safari, it sits there, and then you can just tap a button and start literally drawing on the web page. Now, it doesn't change the web page for everyone that visits it. It allows you to draw on it. And then, as Leon said, you could send that off. So I could look at the web page and maybe highlight a couple of things and say, hey, John, check this out. But I've now highlighted, you know, three or four things on the page that I want him to see. I can draw around it. I can type on it. I can type in little sticky notes so that he sees, you know, so that you would see what I meant or add a little bit of context. It was built so that as they were redesigning their website, they could make comments about the design. And obviously it would work for that too, but lots of different uses. So pretty cool. It's actually been out for 3+ years. And I remembered seeing it when Leon sent it in. I remembered, oh yeah, that's right, that exists. But I never messed with it before. So, again, one of those great things for cool stuff found. It's called Coda Notes. And of course we'll have a link in our lovingly handcrafted show notes. That's good, John. All right. Good stuff.
Yeah, no, okay. Good way to collaborate on anything that's on a web page.
Anything that's on a web page. I agree. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, it's not collaborative, right? I mean, once I make my notes and send them to you, you would then you know, you can't do it live back and forth, but
right.
Yeah. But yes, that's good. All right. Where are we going here? What are we doing, John?
Ooh, I think Joe has something that sounds like it's the future, man.
He does. It's cool. Joe says, when I was looking for a GPS app for my iPhone, you had a mini review that indicated Navigon was the best. I bought it, and I agree. I just found this neat heads-up display unit that works with it and thought it might be of interest to you. And it's called the Garmin, because Garmin owns Navigon, the Garmin heads-up display. It's $150. It's a Bluetooth device, and your phone obviously communicates, maybe not obviously, but your phone communicates with this. And it reflects, it either reflects off of your dashboard, off, you put it on your dashboard and have it shine up and reflect off of your windshield, or you can just flip it up and see this thing, but it gives you the kind of what your car would give you in terms of the heads up on when the next turn is and all of that good stuff. So, so very cool. It's it, you know, it's like what they do in the higher end cars where you can get the option that, that shoots the little heads up display, and just kind of floats it in the middle of your, or the lower yeah. portion of your, of your think, windshield. Yeah.
Or I think many aircraft as well.
And a lot of aircraft have it. Yes. Done a little bit differently on aircraft. I think with the heads up display on aircraft, I don't think they reflected off the windshield. Although they might. Oh, I don't know. What do I know?
I thought some did, but maybe it's embedded in the windshield too.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to take your eyes off the road.
No.
Especially when you're in a plane.
Actually, less so in a plane. It's actually more important in the plane to take your eyes off the, you know, you've got other things to look at. But in a car, things happen in a lot more real time. So, yeah. It's good. So thanks. I'll also say traveling to Canada, I had to think a lot about, I have an AT&T plan, and because my phone because I'm locked into a contract with my phone, John, I can't just buy, I can't unlock my phone. And so I can't buy a local Canadian, you know, prepaid SIM or whatever and pop it in and just use that. So I'm stuck using whatever I can get from AT&T. And that, if I don't plan ahead and I choose to use data roaming and all that stuff, it gets very expensive. So there were a couple of things I did that I'm going to share here. Number one, and I don't know if this is true of Verizon. Well, Verizon probably wouldn't work in Canada anyway. Maybe it does.
No, I think I'm pretty sure. So Canada, Mexico, I think you're okay. Anything beyond that, then it gets.
Okay. Well, with AT&T. If your phone is off and someone calls you and it goes to voicemail, you're not billed for that call. I was going to say you're obviously not billed for that call, but there are some things that are not obvious. So you're not billed, and that's fine. However, if your phone is on and your phone rings and you either ignore it or tell it to, you know, send it to voicemail immediately. Not immediately, but it, you know, if your phone rings and you tap the button that says ignore and it sends it to voicemail, you actually are billed as though A, you answered that call, and then B, forwarded it to voicemail from wherever your phone is. So if, for example, I were in Canada and someone were to call me while I was sleeping and I didn't answer the phone and it went to voicemail automatically. After, you know, it rang four times, and then they left me a 3-minute voicemail. I would actually be billed for 6 minutes of usage, 3 coming into me and 3 going back out to the U.S. number to which I, it automatically forwards my calls. So, the way to deal with that is to have all your calls forward automatically. So that's what I did on your iPhone. You can go into settings, phone, call forwarding, and have it automatically forward to my voicemail number. So that's step number one that I did. And I did not buy, I could have bought an AT&T Canada plan for the month for a voice. I chose not to do that because I kind of figured I probably won't need to, you know, to deal with that. And I can use FaceTime to communicate with the family, especially with iOS 7. I can use FaceTime audio only on the Wi-Fi in the hotel. And that actually worked totally fine. But I was bouncing around a little bit. You know, I spent some time not at the hotel and I didn't want to be totally out of touch. So there were a couple things, and this is where this Garmin thing sort of made me think of this. The first thing I did was I didn't want to necessarily have to rely on a data connection just to figure out where the heck I was in Montreal. So Apple Maps is out. Google Maps is out because those both rely on data connection. Now, sure, I could have found, you know, Starbucks or whatever and use their Wi-Fi, but I didn't want to have to rely on that. So before I left, I put the I want to make sure I get the name of the app right. But I put the Navigon North America app on my phone and I downloaded the maps for Quebec. So I had the map of Montreal local on my phone. And even in airplane mode, I still could use it. And yes, the GPS seemed to work. I guess I wasn't in airplane mode, but I had, you know, I had my calls forwarded. So that was step number one. And I also added the what's called urban guidance to the app, which is their fancy term for pedestrian guidance, so that in a city I can get walking directions and public transit directions and all that stuff. So that part was handy. Incoming text messages are free for AT&T customers, even when you're out of the country. Outgoing would have cost me 30 cents or a dollar, depending on how I sent the message. So, but I did want a moderate data plan or minimal data plan. So for $30, I got 120 megabytes or something, which seems very, very limiting. And it is, but it allows me to send iMessages and also check email and look things up if I needed. So that's kind of how I handled my travels. And actually, I think I used less than 10 megabytes of it, probably because I had the maps preloaded. So it'd be nice if you could preload maps with Apple's app, but you can't, at least not in any obvious way.
So hopefully you were able to adjust your adjust to the units that they use in Canada. So you didn't think that all of a sudden the speed limit increased.
Yeah, I actually changed my car when I crossed through the border. So I can change the units.
Because last I checked, Canada, well, like the rest of the world, uses kilometers, right?
And yes, they do.
Miles per hour. So
yeah. Yeah.
So if you think the speed limit's going up, you may be in for a rude awakening.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The speed limit was, yeah, the maximum was 100 and the minimum was 70. But of course they meant in kilometers per hour. Yep. It was a little disconcerting though. You know, like I said, interacting with people, they were so nice. I was apologetic about not speaking French. They didn't really seem to care. In fact, the first night I went out to dinner with a guy who lives in Montreal. And when we got to the restaurant, he transacted like the whole getting our table in English. And when we sat down, I asked him, I'm like, you live here. And here I am worried about, you know, offending these people and not speaking French. And you live here and you just talk to him in English. He's like, oh, yeah, I think in English all day long. I'm dealing with people. He's like, it's just not a big deal here. So that part wasn't a big deal. But yeah, road signs when I was, you know, alone in the car, I can figure out what exits are and all that. And certainly had the GPS to guide me, but construction signs and detour signs and those kinds of things in a foreign language, a little bit put me a little bit on edge. So it was, you know, it was like, oh yeah, you're kind of a fish out of water here. So anyway, I didn't get a speeding ticket, which was good. I didn't get caught because I didn't speed. Because I just didn't want to risk that.
Yeah.
The radar detectors are illegal in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you don't have the freedoms we have here to pick up radar.
That's right.
Now, I found the same thing when I traveled to Paris a number of years ago. As long, even if you try, the thing is, almost everybody knows English. They take it to school. But right. But if they see you try, then they you know, at least you get a little respect. But you can conduct. And the thing is, when money is involved, a lot of time you don't even need language.
Right. 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 Yeah, well, that's what I did. I mean, I did actually in Montreal, they would have accepted U.S. dollars pretty much everywhere I went. But I did get some Canadian money just to be a little less offensive and a little less, you know, ignorant American kind of thing. But they're really used to that there. It just didn't matter. I apologize when I got to the hotel because I tipped the guy that helped me with my car and my luggage. And I hadn't yet, you know, gone to an ATM or whatever. And I apologize. He's like, no, you don't need to apologize. It's all money. He's like, we're fine. Okay, great. So anyway, a little bit of detour for us. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know what I want to do though, John? I want to talk about our first sponsor, which is Gazelle at gazelle.com. And you know, there's a rumored Apple event coming up, a week from tomorrow, perhaps. And, so, you know, the rumors are that some kind of new iPad is coming. So if you think that you might want to order or get that new iPad that's coming out, today is the day to go and lock in your price at Gazelle for your old iPad if you want to trade one in. Because after they go on sale, Gazelle's prices tend to go down. So go visit Gazelle today, gazelle.com. Tell them what you have. You just do it right online. You could probably do it faster than I'm telling you about it. You put in the condition, you put in the size, put in, you know, the model, if it's a Wi-Fi only, or, you know, if it's AT&T or Verizon or whatever it is, put all that in, put the condition in, and they'll give you a quote. If you like it, say yes. They send you a box. You've given them nothing other than your address. No money exchanges hands until you send it back to them. Prepaid shipping in both directions by them. They cover everything. When they get it back, they evaluate it, make sure it's what you said it was. And if it is, PayPal you the money. That's the only time money exchanges hands, is when they're giving money to you. That's it. Gazelle.com. It's the place to go and check all that out. They'll take care of you. Their customer service is unparalleled. I've experienced it, but so have many of you. And the testimonials we get from you folks, frankly, mean a whole lot more than just my experiences alone. And they're all fantastic. So check it out, gazelle.com. And when you're going through the process, they will ask you where you heard about it. And there is in their drop down, you'll find Matt Geek Gab there. Please choose that. That lets them know that this works, and it helps us out too, because it lets them know that this works. and we like that. So check it out, gazelle.com. You can sell your iPhones, iPod Touches, all that good stuff, in addition to iPads. Gazelle.com. We thank them for being a sponsor. All right, John, what are we moving on to now? Where are we time-wise? Do we even know where we are?
I know.
Do you?
42 minutes.
42 minutes. That's good. All right, so we got time here. Okay, so we can move on to Steve, right? Are we allowed to move on to Steve at this point? I think we can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Steve says, hey guys, hope you're well. He says, I just came across this and thought of you boys. If you drag an appointment in OS X's calendar app, it snaps to the nearest 15 minute time slot. Very handy. If, however, you hold down shift, you can move it with to the minute accuracy. He says, I know it's a small thing, but hey, cool. So yeah, if you've got an appointment that starts at, say, 10 after the hour, you can still do it with dragging. You don't have to click into the event and type the time. You can do it with dragging. You just got to hold down the shift key. Thanks, Steve. That's pretty cool. Good stuff, John. Don't you think?
I think, and I have a little follow-up here, a keyboard-related one. On the next show, we'll go into a bit more detail, because I actually stumbled across it trying to solve a user issue, and I did solve it in a clever way. But again, you have to wait till next week. But I think it was brought up before, but I must not have been paying attention here. But you can get finer grained resolution on a number of things. And the other thing here is, so most Macs have keys that will let you adjust the volume up or down, or maybe the brightness or some other things. Well, if you hold down Alt and Shift while you do that, you get finer grained, rather than moving one increment, I think it moves a quarter of an increment. So if you need that fine grain control over any of the things that you can set through the keyboard, Alt and Shift is something to try out.
And that works with brightness of your screen, right?
And the sound.
And volume. Maybe, I don't know if it works with the brightness of the keyboard. I don't have a laptop in front of me to test that.
Yeah, I can't test that now either because my keyboard's not lit up because the room is too bright. So.
Oh, you can change that too, you know.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. Of course.
I don't want to get too distracted here.
No, that's probably a good idea. All right. Yeah. You know, I will also point out, and I know we've mentioned this in the past, but it is worth pointing out again, is a piece of software called Boom, which will make the audio louder. And I use it anytime I need to watch a movie or decide to watch a movie on my MacBook Air where I need to play it through the speakers. Like if Lisa and I are watching a movie together in a hotel room or something, we can't put it on the TV or, you know, whatever. It's never loud enough to actually hear, especially if those hotel room fans in the air conditioners and the heaters are so loud. Probably because they're at like ear level or above. And so it just, you know, dominates the room. So this software called Boom, it makes it louder by actually using core audio, I think. But it somehow gets in there and presume core audio, and it enhances the sound. It compresses it. It brings it up. It adds a bunch of gain to it. You can actually have it add too much gain and distort things, but you can also back off from that too. And it really, really makes a big difference. It's from a company called Global Delight, but it's one of my favorite pieces of software out there. So we'll put a link to that in there too. I know it's a Cool Stuff Founder Prize, so we won't spend any more time on it here, but it is good stuff because I think we just talked about it a couple of months ago, the last time I used it. Is good. Yeah? We got anything else, John? Or should I move on to this next thing?
Yeah, let's continue.
Okay.
The next thing. We need the next thing.
Do we? Do we have to? Marco writes, and I think this came in about a month ago. This is on a recent Mac Geek episode, about a month ago. You talked about various options to store data between devices, computers, and external hard drives and share in the cloud. I recalled I saw on a Mac News site something about a Kickstarter project that could do all that in a very easy way. The project was called Plug, but they had to change the name, and it is now called Lima. It works on OS X, Windows, and Linux with iOS and Android apps, too. They needed $70,000 and got $1.2 million. So he says the funding period ended. So just a few days ago, but he'll put a link to the Lima Kickstarter project. And what it does is it's very interesting. You connect this device. It's small. You connect it to your Ethernet. It's got an Ethernet jack on one side and a USB jack on the other. And the real benefit so Ethernet you connect to your router, USB port you connect to a hard drive or a hub with a series of hard drives that are yours, and then the app is where the apps is where things start getting very interesting, and it becomes like your own private cloud. I mean, it's actually really what it is, and the app looks to, I mean, we haven't played with it yet, but the app looks to do all sorts of things. Playing, you know, you can see your pictures, you can play movies, obviously you can share files, and it keeps a history of them. So this looks to be a very, very cool thing. The pricing on it, of course, will change once it comes out, but I think there was, you know, it was in that it'll probably be $150. That was for two of them. So you could have your data in two different places. So maybe it's going to be, you know, $80 or something for one of these things when it comes out, and they think they'll deliver in April. So it's pretty cool. Something to check out. Thanks, Marco. It's very, you know, it's nice to see this kind of solution happening very, very simply, which is good. Very good. Right? Anything on that, John?
I've been seeing some, I have to look at them more. I've been seeing a lot of devices that let you do wireless sharing of media, which I think is neat.
Okay. Well, this would be wireless. I mean, you know, it's you're putting it into your, you know, you're putting it on your network, so your devices mm-hmm. could see the data wirelessly too. It's good. Hey, I'm gonna screw up our order a little bit here, John, because I wanted to talk about PhiloSync 2, which is also, I'm gonna call it a personal cloud service. So PhiloSync comes from Stefan, I'm gonna screw up your name, Reitschamer, I think. I don't know. I'm gonna screw up your name. He makes Arc. ARQ, the backup service that backs up to your own Amazon Web Service, your own AWS account. And so PhiloSync can use AWS to run your own personal cloud. And there's a Mac app, a client app for the Mac, and also client apps for iOS and for, Mac and iOS. And, it's pretty cool. You go into Amazon Web Services and you can, depending on how much space you need, you can actually set up a free account. So you get your account there. Your data is stored in a container on Amazon Web Services, but it is encrypted with a key that is only on your devices. So it even if, you know, the feds go and raid Amazon, which of course I'm sure they do, they can't decrypt your data without your key. Amazon does not have the key to this. They have your data, but only in encrypted form. And I think it's $79 a year to run this service. You can run the service again on your Amazon account if you want, or there is a way that you can set up the PhiloSync service to run on your Mac as well. So if you don't want to put it on Amazon, you can do that too. Of course, your Mac has to be on and your network has to be accessible in order for your iPhone or your remote Macs to get at your data. But it's yet another interesting way of doing your own, you know, roll your own cloud server kind of thing, where you're not relying on Dropbox. You're paying for your own storage or providing your own storage, depending on which way you do it. And you can put it on a Mac or a Linux machine. There might even be a way to stuff it onto some routers somewhere that run Linux. That I don't know. Don't hold me to that, but certainly worth checking out, because that would be actually kind of cool. I got to look into that now that I say it, because I might be able to put it on one of my Buffalo routers running DDWRT. So it's cool. It's called PhiloSync, PhiloSync.com. And it's interesting. I love all this cool stuff. We'll put a link in the show notes to the way to install it on the standalone server. It's a Java thing, so nothing wrong with running Java apps. I hate that this whole Java exploit in web browsers makes people hesitant to run Java, you know, applications on their Macs. There's no reason to hesitate that. But I might be able to put it on my disk station if it runs Java. So I gotta mess with this. This is too cool. PhiloSync. It's worth checking out. Any thoughts on that, John?
Not yet.
All right. Well, there you go.
I found another cloud service. I was surfing around the other day.
Yeah.
My menu bar is getting crowded here.
You need bartender, man.
I was buying some stuff on Amazon the other day, and I kind of noticed something in the corner of the screen. It's like, hey, how about your Amazon cloud, man?
Oh, yeah.
So they offer 5 gigs, like most people, they'll offer you 5 gigs. And I think if you purchase stuff from them, I think you have the option to sync it to your Amazon cloud account. I'm pretty sure they do that. I mean, other than that, it's like, you know, why do you need yet another? I mean, I'm loaded up here, man. I mean, I got Dropbox, I got SugarSync, I got Amazon cloud, I got this cloud, that cloud.
Are you using BitTorrent Sync?
No.
Oh, you should. BitTorrent Sync. It's like, you know, it's the wave of the future. It's yet another one of these things, but it's secure and it's peer to peer. Your data is kind of like, you know, yeah. It's interesting. Yes. All right. You got anything else, John? Should I take one? Well, I know we never will get through all of these. It's fine.
Well, it looks like you're next on the list here.
Okay. So today, and I'm realizing now I should have dragged my son over here. today, this morning, about 20 minutes before we started recording, Sonos, you folks know I'm a big Sonos fan. It's so easy to use their stuff. You just plug it into your network and it accesses your, it's essentially wireless audio, high quality audio, I will say. But you plug it into your network and it accesses your streaming music. It'll also access your iTunes library, so you can just play music. And then where it really gets interesting is when you add a second Sonos device, and you can either have them playing the same thing, you can have them play different things. They all kind of network themselves together. It's super, super simple, and it just works. So today they came out with the newest member of the Sonos family called the Play One. $199. It's actually got two speakers in it, so I guess it should be called the Play Two, but they chose to call it the Play One. It's got a woofer and a tweeter. It's a tiny little thing with a huge sound. They might hate me for saying this, but it's like one of those stand up tissue box size things. It looks much cooler than a tissue box. It's actually really elegant. And the sound with it is huge. They sent me a couple of them to play with, but I knew I wasn't going to be back until late last night. And I knew I wanted to talk about it on the show today. So after swearing my son to secrecy, I told him to open the box. This was Friday afternoon while I was in Montreal, and he set them up, which is a testament. I mean, he's actually really, really smart, but, you know, I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he'd be able to set these things up, configure them, add them to our system, it all with his iOS app. And certainly he did. He actually set them up, individually first, and then put them in a stereo pair, which you can do with really anything from Sonos. And in our kitchen previously, we had a Play 3. And so we set one of these up. And then last night when I got home, I actually got home a lot earlier than I thought. So I played with them for quite a while. These things sound really good. They betray their size. And $199, it's an awesome way to either get into Sonos just to begin with or to add to your Sonos setup. You know, it's the kind of thing that for us, where we've got quite a bit of Sonos stuff already. I would definitely use these as, you know, in the bedroom units if we didn't already have Play 3s in our bedrooms. So now I would think if I were to get some of these, I would use them as in the bathroom units because it'd be awesome to have Sonos in the bathroom. But you know, nice while showering or whatever. You got to keep it, you know, away from all the steam, obviously. But they sound fantastic. Compared to the Play 3, they have, I would say, just as much low end as the Play 3. And a little bit more, the sound signature adds a little bit more mid-range, but not necessarily, or not at all, in a bad way. It actually fills out the sound. I wouldn't say they sound better than the Play 3s or worse. They just sound a little bit different, but it's so nice and really convenient size because, you know, you can just kind of tuck them into a corner or put them up somewhere. And I think right now, if you buy it for $199, you get what's called the Sonos Bridge. So when you set up Sonos, you have to plug some unit into your wireless, into your router, hardwired via Ethernet. Once you have one unit in, as long as everything's within range, it will just send to all its other units. But you have to have that one. It can, the one that's plugged in can be a speaker if you want a speaker near your router, and you may or may not. Or you can plug in what's called a bridge, which just does the bridge to create the Sonos wireless mesh. And I think for $199, I think I saw this morning that they're even coming with a free bridge. So, yeah, it's cool. It's I'm really impressed, and I'm so happy that now for $199 you can get started with Sonos, because I think it's you know, that's always understandably been sort of the complaint is, gosh, if I want to get involved in this, you know, now for less than $500 you can have Sonos in two rooms and still have $100 left over. 102 if you don't have to pay tax.
Huh.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I know you got to play with some Sonos stuff as helping a friend out, sorting out his router recently, right, John?
I think I was sorting out his router. So Well, we're still not sure what the problem is. That's our friend Duffy. He's been in touch with you too.
But yeah,
Something's you know, it's like a lot of these things go. So he brought his entire Sonos setup, and because he said he was having some issues with it not streaming properly. I don't know what was going on, but he brought lugged the whole thing over to my house, and we plugged everything in, including an inexpensive router that I sold him, and it worked.
Yep.
And he brought it back home and is having issues. And I think it may be his, layout, you know, because I'm in a relatively small space. And I think he's trying to make it work in a larger environment. And I think he may be running an interference and stuff like that. But
could be. Yeah.
No, I was pretty impressed. I mean, you walked me through a bit of it, but it was, I didn't read any manual or anything. I just kind of, plugged everything in, ran their app, and it pretty much worked as expected.
Yep. Yeah, it's cool. Which is good. I've thought about taking them with me, like if we go, not to a hotel room, although you could, but when we go and travel and do like the home away thing and stay at an apartment for a week, this would be the size thing that you could throw in a suitcase. I mean, you wouldn't throw it in you could even throw it in like an overnight, a carry on bag kind of thing, because it's that small and you just plug it in and good to go. So yes. Good stuff. Really excited about this one. For a lot of reasons. Good stuff. All right. What do you got, John? What's next?
Dave, these people are crazy. All right. So I'm going to mention. So this is like multiple tips in one here. But I'm going to mention the first tip here. So some of you know I'm into cameras and photography. I just posted. I just had some fun the other night doing some night photography. That gets to be a challenge depending on your camera.
Sure.
But there's a site that I've used in the past and currently that is a great help, because the thing is, there's so many cameras out there. It's impossible or it's very difficult to make an informed choice because there's just so many variables. I mean, how do you make a choice? Well, you could go to a site where they take cameras and break them down by class, but also let you compare the ins and the outs. And the name of the site is snapsort.com. And they basically let you, pick a few. They'll either give you previously agreed upon, categories. So they'll have like travel zoom, tiny pro, semi pro, DSLR, professional, things like that. And then give you what the top choices are and also let you compare side by side, because you may have different requirements than the people who decided this is the best camera for this or that. So
sure.
Very good site for that. And I think they do a very good job allowing you. The only weird thing is that they don't seem to have the camera that I recently got, the Polaroid camera. They don't have that in their database. I'll have to find out why.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe
you need to put it in there.
I think they got people to do that.
Oh, okay.
It's tough to ask them, but yeah, it's the only thing. I found a couple of Polaroid cameras, but not the particular one that I have. It seems to be a very unknown camera, which is too bad, because I think it has some nice features. The IS-2132, I think it is. But then, Dave, that they've decided to not just do cameras, but they took their expertise in doing the camera comparisons, Dave, and now they have a whole bunch of other sites here. So they have one called Geekaphone. And as you can probably guess here, it lets you compare telephones. And I guess maybe tablets, but mostly here. So I'm looking now. And so it'll have, has Galaxy, iPhone, stuff like that. So you can compare phones. Of course, there's really no comparison, right?
I don't understand the premise of this, John. No.
Well, the premise could be that. I'll admit it. I know some people that have Android phones and they're fine phones.
Oh, they are. Actually, there's quite a few Android phones that are very, very cool. And I would love to play with. Yeah. Yeah. Without question.
Yeah. No, I mean, some of them are ridiculously huge and stuff like that. And but Android's a fine OS. I guess my only gripe about Android is that it's a very fragmented marketplace, especially when I looked at it as a developer. Is you got all these different flavors of the OS, and it becomes very difficult, I think, for app developers to target all of them.
They have that thing. Yeah.
So they have that site as well. Then they have another one, Dave. So once you dive into the camera space, all the cameras that I have a fixed lens. So there's no choice. The lens you get is the lens you get. But if you get a DSLR, another thing you have to decide on is, well, what kind of lens do I get? And so they also have a thing called Lens Hero, which will let you compare different lenses. And then finally, so not only do they have, so there's SnapSort for cameras, Geekaphone for phones, Lens Hero for lenses. And then finally, Dave, well, why the heck not? They have their final site here, which I think is their most recent, called Car Sort. So you want to compare cars? Go ahead.
Huh.
I love these guys. I think they started with comparing cameras and then sure. learned that whatever engine or whatever they have in the back there is probably well suited to let you compare and rank not only cameras, but other things as well.
So. That's really smart. I like it. That's awesome. Boy, that you're right. That was a 4-in-1, a forfer.
Yeah. So if you go to snapsort.com, you'll see that they have links where you can quickly access all of the other sites here.
Sure. Sure. Cool.
Yeah, that's them. And then if we're talking, you know, I'm on a roll here, but I think, let me see if it makes sense to talk about something else here. Well, if we're talking about cameras, Dave, right, I'll just mention this quick because it just happened, kind of like the Sonos thing. I mean, we're on the leading edge here, Dave. So we recently talked about Dropcam, which is a security camera. I would say a security camera that lets you do audio and video. And just this week, Dave, or last week, they introduced a new one. So I have the existing one, which is their regular Dropcam, but now they introduced Dropcam Pro. So it basically has better resolution, more zoom, and a wider field of view. And I think also an iOS setup as well. So there you go. Yeah, if you go to their site, you'll see it. Dropcam Pro. So they have the regular and the Pro. Regular is $149. The Pro is $199.
All right.
So maybe they can, you know, because I think if we wanted to see Hector, we want to see Hector in all her high-res glory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, that would be really cool to have the new TMO and Mackie Cab mascot exposing herself for the world. That's the wrong way to say that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that's what we mean. She's crazy, by the way. She,
I heard she had a little, conversation with, Lisa was posting a conversation.
She's so smart, dude.
It just baffles me that you can interact with the bird and that there's intelligence.
It's not just that they can say words or mimic what you've said. It's that they actually understand what they're saying often. Yeah, she's nuts. It's great, though. It's really, really cool. She's really smart. Okay, so we've got Dropcam Pro. We've got all that good stuff. So now we'll go into the roll your own category. And we'll talk about airfoil for the Mac because Mark suggested that as part of Cool Stuff Found. What did I do here? I totally screwed everything up. No, not that. All right. I don't know what Mark said because I can't pull up his email because I'm being an idiot about how I use my organizational utilities here. There it is. He says, I just thought that I would write about one of my favorite Mac programs called Airfoil. One that you cannot obtain on the Mac App Store because of their rules for sandboxing. He says, I really enjoy having the speaker component on my iPhone and iPad. It's nice to be able to stream to sound docks and turn them into wireless speakers without the need of an Airport Express. So Airfoil is in the roll your own remote audio category, and they have an app for iOS called Airfoil Remote and also an app for the Mac. From your Mac, John, you have an Airport Express, and you can stream iTunes and QuickTime audio to your Airport Express, right? Right?
QuickTime?
I think so.
I haven't tried that.
Okay.
I suppose.
I think
definitely
so.
From within iTunes.
Certainly.
Well, iTunes. I think from within iTunes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what Airfoil lets you do is, it's a free download. And you can get this, he says, but it's a free, you can test it for free, but after 10 minutes, it starts adding noise to the signal. It's $25 to get a license key. So, Airfoil streams audio from any app. These are from the same folks that make the things we use to record, John. I use Audio Hijack Pro, you use Piezo. But these folks at Rogue Amoeba really understand how to work with audio on the Mac. So if you want to, say, take Spotify or Moog or RDO or Pandora or really any app that's producing audio on your Mac and stream that audio to your Airport Express, you can do that with Airfoil. And that's what it does. It grabs that audio and then lets you stream it to an Airport Express. And then, as Mark was saying, you can get the Airfoil remote app, which will run, it's $5. It runs on your iPhone or iPad, and you can stream audio from your Mac or control audio from your Mac on to or on your iPhone. You can do both. And as Mark says, he then takes his iPhone, he puts it into a wireless speaker dock, and now he's got audio coming from his Mac streaming. And of course, it can all be synced up. So it's essentially use your own hardware and roll your own wireless streaming audio Sonos like thing in your house. So very good stuff. Check it out at Rogue Amoeba. We'll put it in the show notes because that's what we do. Thanks, Mark. Airfoil. There we go. All right. What else do we got, John? You got one for me? We got time for a couple of more. One more each. Ish.
Well, I guess I'll mention something that I've recently gotten. I've been learning more about Dave here, but this is it's different from what you have, but we've talked about Synology.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
But I'll talk about it here. So what I have, and I intentionally got a model that Dave doesn't have because
That's
how I roll. Yeah. Well, I didn't want to get the same thing. It was kind of redundant. You know, I wanted a different experience here.
Sure.
And also, you know, I just thought it'd be good for us to, learn about the different aspects of their product line.
Absolutely.
So which one do you have again, Dave?
I have had the DS412, which is a 4-bay unit with an Intel chip. Now I have the DS1513 Plus, which is the 5-bay unit with an Intel chip. And the Intel chip's important for, I think, what you're going to talk about now. And which model do you have, John?
So when I was talking to them, I said, you know what? I really, at this point, well, I said, you know what? I don't know if I need one with 4 or 5 bays. I'm like, do you guys have anything with, maybe a couple of bays?
Yep.
With room for future expansion? And they said, yep. What you want to check out, John, is the DS713 Plus. So out of the box, this is they all are, I think, they're pretty powerful units here. I think this is, has a dual core CPU. And
as long as it's got an Intel chip, that's the real trick, is you need that.
Yeah.
For apps. Yep.
So it's got a dual core. It has 2 network interfaces, which I guess, they can buddy up. It'll support USB 3. But then the important thing about this one, Dave, is that if you want to. So right now I only have 2 drives in it. Set up with their somewhat proprietary, what do they call it?
They call it Synology Hybrid RAID. And yes, what that
SHR.
What that lets you do, in short, is when you've got, in your unit, not so much, you basically need to use drives of the same size in order to get fault tolerance and maximize your space. But when you've got a unit that, that's got 4 or 5 or 8 bays, you can, or as you expand, if you add an expansion bay, you can add and mix and match drives of different sizes and still have it kind of coalesce them all together and make one big, large volume. And that I find that hugely important. Drobo does that. QNAP does not do that. I just got one of their units. I'm hoping that at some point in the not too distant future, they will allow that. Cause I want to mess with that. And I've got the Drobo 5N here to mess with. So I'll be playing with that stuff this week. But anyway, back to you. Go. Yeah.
Yeah. So I set it up. So right now I have it set up with 3 users. So one is one user with an associated quota, which is nice for doing Time Machine backup. So one for my Mini, one for my MacBook Pro. And then the rest of it is just the general purpose volume. So that was the first thing I did. But then, Dave, when you popped in, you piqued my interest here because Not only does it do, you know, the raid type stuff that a lot of others do, they have apps. So this was the coolest thing. So you actually suggested that I get some apps here. So I actually downloaded.
This is the reason I like, I mean, you've heard me. I think our listeners have listened to me more. I think you tuned me out when I've started raving about Synology and their apps in the past. But I was glad to see you finally kind of latch on. This is good. Because this is the whole reason to get Synology. But go ahead.
Right. Well, one is their, I mean, the one thing I like is their DSM software, which, you know, is browser based and you access from a browser, and it's like running software from a desktop. It's very well done.
Yeah.
But then they also have apps. And so I downloaded actually a couple of their iOS apps. Now you have to, you know, set up, you have to activate a lot of the sharing features like the cloud feature and, you know, web dev and all that. But once you do, you can download these free apps here. So I downloaded, so I got three of them right now. So DS Finder, I think, is just the general purpose, you know, gives you the status of it and all that. But then there's DS File and DS Cloud that allow you to access the various file sharing capabilities of the unit as well.
Yes.
For me, it's just, I mean the
That's
stuff
right.
that...
And you're just talking about the Synology stuff. You haven't even branched out. Well, you haven't even seen, you haven't even gotten to the full range of Synology stuff, but that's fine. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I've peeked at the app. So if you go to one of the control panels that they'll actually show you, oh, well, there's all these apps you can add as well. You know, you can do, you know, music streaming and video streaming and
yeah.
DLNA, I think do they DLNA? Is that what it's called? Yeah. So if there's an app, if there's an app that lets you share stuff with people, it probably exists somewhere. It's just mind-boggling, all the stuff they have.
And you can add, so what you're seeing now are either apps that Synology, and this is what's available and exposed by default, you're seeing apps that Synology has either written in-house, and there's tons of them. Everything, I think, in fact, everything you've mentioned so far is stuff they've done in-house, including the audio streaming and all of that. And then they've also got some, what I'll call official partners that they include their apps. And I think it is possible now for people to charge for apps. I haven't run into an app that is not free, but I think that's possible now. So there's that. But then you can add, anybody can make an app. And I actually wrote an app for my Synology to manage my, I'm going to regret saying this because now I'm going to have to release it and actually polish it up so that it's releasable. But I wrote an app so that I could run Stream Baby, which is a TiVo streamer, on my Synology. I was running it without an app before, but every time I updated the software, I had to reinstall and reconfigure the thing. And now that it's in a package, it's all good. But you can, you know, third parties can release apps and they can actually release them on their own repositories. So you add the repository in and boom, now you can see stuff. And that's how I've got Crash Plan running on mine and other cool stuff like that. So it's cool. The audio streamer is awesome. If you have your audio library on your NAS already, you install Audio Station on the NAS, which is again a free app from Synology, and then you install DS Audio on, say, your iPhone, and then when you're out in your car, you can stream audio from your disk station to your car. It's like rolling your own iTunes match. It's awesome, and it works great. I highly recommend it, John. It's good. Yeah. Good. No.
Indeed.
Okay.
I'm still. I should set a goal of, you know, maybe installing an app a week and learning about it.
Oh, there you go. That's a good idea. That's actually that's the right way to do it. It. Yeah, I will absolutely say that there is so much you can do with these Synology things that it's overwhelming. And they have a whole thing that I've never even messed with called, I'm gonna get it wrong. I think it's Surveillance Station, but I don't think it. Where you hook up cameras, right, all over your house or office or whatever, and then the Synology will manage them and give you your own web interface to stream those cameras to, you know, securely to wherever you want. So maybe that's the way we do the Hector thing. I should mess with this. This is, I don't know why I haven't, but I haven't, because it's just very, very, you know, there's so much to do. I've only done so much. So it's fun, right? Fun. Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah, when I was looking through the apps, I saw one where it had a little camera as the icon. So it must be it must be that one.
Yeah. All right. Bruce says, you recently spoke about file renaming software that you use. Namechanger is free and might work for a cool stuff found, even cooler for you guys specifically. is the blog where I found this called the AMSYS, A-M-S-Y-S blog. But he's right. Is a name changer. It is, it allows you to set all different kinds of rules and then rename your files, with that. So, and it is at rrsoftware.com. Sorry, not RR, mrrsoftware.com, but you don't need to remember that. We'll put a link directly to Name Changer in the show notes. It's donationware, so you can certainly download it and mess with it for free. But yeah, that's cool. It's a batch name changer, which is super handy sometimes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I did find it. Yeah. Surveillance station.
Yes. It is. I guessed it right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. I will. Yeah. I just haven't learned enough about it. I'm curious, do you have to have the cameras plugged into the, plugged into the disk station? Cause it has USB, or some of them have USB ports, or can you have them wireless on your network?
Well, it says it's a web-based application that manages IP cameras.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if you can use like USB cameras with it.
No, you probably wouldn't. You'd probably use standalone IP. Maybe the drop cam would work with it. Right. I mean, maybe there's a way.
Well, they're.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. We should talk to them because they're Wi-Fi. I don't know if they really reveal their. I would assume they're doing some sort of TCP/IP, but I don't know if they make it available. That's a good question.
Yeah, it's there is I put a link in our chat room here, John, to their IP camera support list. So I don't see Dropcam. Brand in there. So that's how it goes. And then Furby's, in response to Bruce's suggestion for name changer, suggested better rename 9. It is, I got to get to the US store to get the price right. It is $19.99 for better rename 9 and has a very robust looking user interface where you can set all kinds of things and how you want it to sort and all kinds of stuff. So we will add that in too, because that's what we do. Better rename 9. Show notes created as we go. We should have time for one more. I think yeah, I am going to do this one because this is cool. This sort of ties into what we were talking about at the beginning with Singleton. Because if you want to develop apps, you got to start somewhere. And sometimes the best thing to do is to sort of shortcut yourself to payoff mode so that you can mess with something and create it and experience at least at a top level the process of creating something and seeing that result. And then that might be enough to dig you in deeper. And Chris has a cool stuff found suggestion that fits exactly in that realm. He says, I wanted to share with you. He says, I am no coder, but I have just made and had my first app approved. He says, and the app is called Levin's Garden, and it's actually been out for a little while. This has been sitting in our queue for a little while. So Levens Garden. And we will put that in the link to that in the show notes, of course, if it's still there in the store. He says the magic comes through something called BuzzTouch at BuzzTouch.com. You create the project through online control panels and linking cool plugins. Then you get to download and keep the entire code for you to tinker with as much or as little as you like in Xcode before submitting to Apple. The community at BuzzTouch is super helpful and helps steer me through creating my first app. If anyone has ambitions to develop for iOS or Android, I can certainly recommend BuzzTouch. So that's I love things like this because it truly is the way to get rolling with the whole App Store experience. Right, John? No?
That's how I approach things, man.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. Well, yeah, but with this you don't have to start from scratch. That's the point.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, anything I've developed, typically Yeah. Or, you know, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
Yeah, this isn't really stealing, though. I believe in that.
No, I know. No.
No,
what I'm saying is development is rarely do you have to code something from scratch. Start right. with a framework or whatever. And you know, you add the pieces that you need. They're already out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're right. They're out there. Yeah, no, it's cool. I love it. I love this kind of thing. I'm actually going to turn my son on to BuzzTouch, and he'll be mad at me that I didn't tell him 3 months ago or whatever when this came in. That's okay. All in due time. BuzzTouch.
Yeah.
Scratched off the list.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the way to get, like you said, it's the way to get started, because what you get to do with something like BuzzTouch is you graphically create this app by linking all these things together. But then you can go look at the code behind it. And then, like he said, you can tinker and like you said, John, that, you know, starting in the middle allows you some frame of reference. So.
Oh, it's good. They filled a niche there, you know? Yeah, for the longest time, I was hoping Real, because Real makes a nice platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever they call it now. It was Real Basic. Now I think it's a Real Studio or Real Software.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, but I don't think they ever made the leap to... Oh, look at this. They changed. Oh, I haven't been paying attention. Real Software and Real Studio are now Zojo.
Huh?
Right. X-O-J-O. Interesting.
That is interesting. Cool. All right. If you want to send in Cool Stuff Found, or if you have questions or anything, really, email feedback@macgeekab.com.
Dave, you know, even in Canada, you could send an email to feedback@macgeekab.com.
Yes, yes, yes. feedback@macgeekab.com is what you said. That works in French, too. So you can do it in the French Canadian side of Canada there. Those of you that are premium members or become premium members, you can email us at premium@macgeekab.com. And we do go through that stuff first, though we do try to get through everything. This week with my traveling and John having to eat lunch with me, we didn't get through everything. Right?
I didn't spend all week eating lunch.
Yeah, but you also didn't spend all week answering all the questions in the queue. So, you know, I was trying to be nice about it. That's good.
Some of the questions, not all of them.
No. I know. You always leave the hard stuff for me is what happens. You'll make a pass through. You'll take the ones you know. And then I got to dig in. That's how it works. You can dig in too, though.
I take the ones I don't know.
I know you do. I know. I'm giving you a hard time. That's what I got to do. That's how it works.
Yeah,
but you did explain object-oriented, the concept of objects to me at lunch, and that was actually quite valuable. I spent a lot of time cogitating on that on my travels. So.
I hope, and yeah, I mean, there's plenty of backup material out there, but yeah. It's a powerful concept. I don't necessarily think it's, well, it's easy to write something that's object-oriented, but still isn't built right or designed right. I've seen it.
Right, right.
You can write object-oriented spaghetti code.
Oh, that's going to be my specialty. Okay, good, because I'm really good at spaghetti code. I mean, I'm a pro at that. Yeah, yeah, that's good. All right, what else? Where were we? 206-666-GEEK is the number to call if you want to leave a voicemail for us. Geek, John, is
43. 35.
You can also
there's more.
Yeah, you can use the MacGeekab app, and you can send email, you can attach audio to it, you can bookmark where you are in the show. If there was a topic in the show that you wanted to, like, oh, I got to go back to that Coda Notes thing, but you're like on the subway or driving or whatever, just leave a bookmark and then you can come back to it and listen to it later and, jump off at that point. This is good stuff. Check out the app in the App Store. That lets you do it. What else, John?
Facebook.com/MacGeekab. What can you see there? You can see usually, well, almost always. Yeah, you will see when the next show is.
That's right.
You can also post messages when I lovingly handcraft the show notes and I'm done with that. I will post a notification. So if you want to keep up with what's happening with the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/MacGeekGab. But there's also the Twitters. If you want to find that guy, he's Dave Hamilton. I am John F. Braun. The podcast is MacGeekGab. The publication is Mac Observer.
Outstanding. That's it. That's what we got. We want to thank Michael Johnston from We Have Communicators podcast and getappler.com. Yes, Michael, we are going to have you on the show soon. We just got to coordinate it. So we will make that happen this week now that I'm back from my travels. Michael takes this show, adds all the chapters, adds all of the links and images, sometimes even funny images that surprise us, which is awesome. And he does all that work to make the show better for you. So thank you, Michael, for that. We also want to thank Cashfly, CACHEFLY.com, for the bandwidth to get the show from us to you, because that's important stuff, too. And the podcast marketplace is also what helps support things here. The folks at Barebones with BB Edit and Yojimbo, folks at Smile with Text Expander and PDF Pen Scan Plus. Of course, the folks at Gazelle, sell all your stuff off. Squarespace for your hosting needs. 10% off with MGG10 because it's October, which is the 10th month of the year. We will be back next week. But until then, John, I have a bit of advice for you that I learned traveling in Canada. And that is...
Really?
Yeah. Don't get caught.
Made up.